Comic book, comic book, does whatever a book does. Read by us while drinking, incoherent rambling. Look out, this is our podcast.
Welcome to the SJW Comic Book Club, a weekly book club style podcast where three friends discuss a story arc or event in comics. Like most successful book clubs, we have three key elements: books, friends, and booze. I'm host number one, Monte.
I'm host number two, Veronica.
And I'm host number three, Melissa.
The three of us have been friends for years, ever since middle school, and we've always been really into books, movies, and other types of media. We also usually talk to each other quite a bit about what we're watching or reading, because the best part of consuming media is talking about it with your friends. So that's what we do with this podcast. We take an arc in comics, and we discuss it from a literary and progressive point of view. We generally try to approach comics from the perspective of people of color, women, LGBT people, and people who are not as widely represented in fiction. But before we start with this week's story, which is about LGBT people, I have a question for you guys that is very important. Our couple for this week was Midnighter and Apollo. So who would you rather, Midnighter or Apollo?
Well, one is a murder man and the other one is a god. Mm-hmm. So that's a tough call.
Yeah.
Apollo did seem a lot nicer, though. So
I honestly have a hard time because the one is a hairy, scary murder man who does that thing that I hate when Batman does, where he grins like a maniac in his scary Batman-esque mask all the time. Another one, we didn't get
pummeling people.
While pummeling and covered in blood. The other one, we didn't get to know Apollo super as well as we did Midnighter, and he's too buff mm-hmm. for me. I know that won't hold some other people back, but I can't decide.
I've been thinking about this all morning, and I still don't have an answer.
It's up in the air, Monte. We don't know.
It's just the murder.
I don't understand how this is a question.
The murder thing is really intimidating. So I'm going to say, but he looks great covered in blood. So just, you know, it's a tough call. I'm going to go with Apollo because he probably wouldn't murder me on accident because of all the murder.
With his
computer brain. You know, Midnighter with his computer brain and the murder.
By the way, I have a computer brain.
It's probably, gonna have to be Apollo, but I'm so conflicted because he's too buff, he has lame hair, and he doesn't have a sweet trench coat. And those are all the things that draw me back over to Midnighter.
Well, it is sad to me that nobody chose Midnighter, so that makes me want to choose him, but I am going to choose Apollo, definitely, for sure.
Like, viscerally, I feel Midnighter more, but there's too much murder. It's too much murder.
So each season, Veronica and I pick a theme.
My theme this season is green.
And my theme this season is LGBT super couples, which leads into our super couple for this week, Midnighter and Apollo, the starring characters in the comic Midnighter and Apollo, published in 2016. And we read issues 1-6, which is the whole run. This was written by Steve Orlando and drawn by Fernando Blanco. And a little bit of background about the characters. Midnighter and Apollo were created by Warren Ellis and Brian Hatch in 1998 as characters in the Wildstorm universe, which is one of the alternate universes in DC. I'm not sure if childhood trauma was a major theme in the original stories because I've never read them, but when Midnighter and Apollo were written into the mainstream DC universe, the characters were reimagined as having been survivors of childhood trauma, which is mentioned many times in the story we read this week. The characters were also introduced as gay lovers, and every incarnation of them that I know of has been of an LGBT couple. So there's a difference between Midnighter and Apollo and Shatterstar and Richter, which we read last time we did one of my stories, in that they aren't characters that were revised to be gay. They were created as gay characters. So in this story, Midnighter and Apollo have recently gotten back together after breaking up. However, there are still some issues causing tension between them, specifically Midnighter's reliance on violence to solve problems and his seeming glee in killing his enemies.
So much glee.
Yes, which really bothers Apollo, who wants to take a more, let's say, diplomatic approach to solving problems than just punching through the problem. Not punching the problem, but no. punching through the head yes. of the problem.
Leaving a gaping hole in the problem.
There were several people who he punched through their head.
Yes. Spraying blood everywhere.
Yes. But before they can come to a solution, Apollo is killed by the demon Mauser and transported to hell. Midnighter fights through hordes of demons to rescue Apollo, while Apollo plays a game with Neron, the ruler of hell, for his soul. And I'm not going to spoil the ending in the synopsis, but we probably will talk about the ending. So just spoiler alert, if that sounds like a story you want to read and you don't want to hear us talk about the ending, then you should read it before listening to this episode.
Pause, go read it, come right back, finish the episode.
Email yes. us your answer of which one. Who would you?
Yes.
Who would you do?
Who?
Who would you do? Who would you do?
But before you tell us who you would do, it's important that you know what we're drinking or who we're drinking. Melissa? Is there people in this? I don't know.
We actually did see a couple different drinks in this comic that were the tortured souls of other people.
Of the damned.
But it was really expensive. So what I made for you guys was an Apollo rum cocktail. Because Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's whatever. Anyway, the recipe sounded good. It's squeezed lime, cinnamon syrup, which I created myself, which is very easy to do. It's as simple as making simple syrup, which is also pretty simple. You just add cinnamon. And then rum and pineapple juice. So what do you guys think?
It's kind of like that moonshine apple pie drink, but not as strong. And then the lime kind of like evens it out. It's really good.
It is delicious. I've already drank half of it, actually. So
that was my
that's why I had to go get something to eat really quick, because I was like, oh, this is not sustainable.
Very smooth.
Yes.
Good.
It's also very sparkly if you get it in the sunlight. It's got like little pulps and cinnamon bits yeah. in it, and it sparkles.
I would argue that I like pulp, which is why I don't strain the lime juice, because I just cut a lime in half and then squeeze it into the shaker. But I'm too lazy to strain lime juice. I don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm a very busy woman. I have a podcast I have to record.
All right. So how did you guys feel about this story overall? What were your general impressions?
I really like this story. I appreciated the large amount of butts that were either directly or indirectly the focus of the panel. Appreciated that. That was kind of what I was missing with the Richter and Chatterstar story. It was very unfortunate that we couldn't have this amount of butts in the previous one, but this one was good. The artwork was really detailed. And even though it kind of had a very typical artwork feel, like it, you know, we talk sometimes about certain comics having a really interesting and unique style, and then they are also detailed. Like this one has a very typical looking comic book style, but also very detailed on just like little nuances of tiny details of things that they could have definitely foregone without you putting that effort into it. And it just really added an element to this.
Yeah, it was a lot like Swamp Thing in that
yeah.
way.
I think the story at the beginning was, it felt rushed the first time I read it because there was just a lot of information to digest. But honestly, by the time I got to like the middle of the comic and we're in the main story plot line and Midnighter is rescuing Apollo from hell, I'm like, yeah, I'm so glad we didn't waste all this time on like boring friend dinners and some random thing over here, and just get to the good stuff. And I feel like it went fast to get to the good stuff, and then it was in the good stuff for like four issues, and I was like, yes.
Yes, the interesting things. Yeah, I felt like it was really good, and it had sort of like a more insulated feel than a lot of comics we've read, even single character titles that we've read, where like, thinking back, I realized there were a bunch of side characters that we saw for, like, one panel or that helped people out, but it didn't feel that way. It felt very much like an insular story, Like when we were trying just now to think of who to add to Marry, Fuck, Kill, we had to be like, who was even a third person who was attractive? And that got us that feeling, even if maybe there were those characters, but we don't remember them strongly because it got through them, got to the action, and stuck to it. I think there was even maybe just one page where Midnighter was escaping from Bendix's lair, and he's like, I devised an obstacle course just for you, and it'll take you forever. And it took up one page
because
he was like, punch, yeah. punch, punch, getting back to the story. I thought that was going to be like the rest of the next several issues, but it got through it. And yeah, it was just felt like a really personal story, but also full of action 100%.
I think they did. They definitely had a good balance of action and like character work and letting you get to know the characters. I agree that the first issue did start off a little bit slow and it was kind of confusing because these are also characters that I'm kind of new to. Like, I knew who they were, but I've never read any of their stories other than this one. Mm-hmm. So, it was kind of like confusing and stuff, but it did. Well, no, I don't think it was confusing because it definitely was explicit in telling you exactly who they are and what was going on with them and what kind of brains they have.
Be it God or computer brain.
I like, Jesus Christ, if they turned this into a show, you couldn't do a drinking game that was take a shot every time they mention a fight brain or a computer brain or a computer fight brain, because you would just literally die of alcohol poisoning within the first half hour.
Yes.
But it was fine. It was annoying. Like, it irritated me at first, and I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, like, I get it. But then eventually it just became a thing where it was like, okay, yeah, that's okay, fine, yeah. It's just a quirk of his character that he constantly has to reiterate to everyone that he sees and himself that he has a computer brain.
Yes. So you know the reason he's so good at punching through things. And so many things is because of his computer fight murder brain.
Through flesh and bone. I agree that it was a pretty good story, and one that I enjoyed quite a bit. Like, once it got through the first issue, it was a really, really quick read.
Yes.
Just because there was so much action and the art kind of told the story for it because, like Melissa said, it was so detailed and stuff. So
yeah, it felt very much like a DC comic that was modern but also had like the corniness of villains and titles and circumstance that you want from a comic book.
Yes, Mauser the Gun Demon. Brilliant.
So good. Going to hell in the first place in DC is so like not a religious experience.
So how do you guys think that this story compares to X-Factor, just in terms of the story and like the themes and everything?
I think similar to how I had a hard time choosing between these two, because I don't dislike them in any way necessarily. It's just like both the characters in X-Factor were so appealing and they're part of the Marvel Universe so succinctly and had such an interesting and appealing ensemble cast as well that I think, and I'm still reading X-Factor, infuriatingly, whereas Midnighter Apollo is good and I really enjoyed it. This is apparently the whole run and it doesn't really, like, we don't know as the DC universe as well as the Marvel universe at this point, but it doesn't feel like part of a whole as much. So I think I liked X-Factor a bit more.
I think they were both really good reads. They both had the concept of something happens, which leads you to the next thing, which leads you to the next thing, which leads you to the next thing. And it was very, to get to C, you got to talk to B, which then you have to give something to C, who gives you something to give back to D or whatever. And then you finally, you know what I mean? Like, it was a very plot-driven story, which this one had also a similar. You got to fight your way from A to B by killing a bunch of things. Only this story had Midnighter doing it like four times. He had to kill a bunch of people to get from A to B. But it is a little unfair to compare them in some ways because of an ensemble cast versus, this is specifically a story between Apollo and Midnighter and their relationship, and there was a spotlight on it, and it was like the main driving force and motivation behind the characters is their relationship, which I really appreciated, because it's not fair to say that X Factor didn't do that, because that's not what it was. But I would say I enjoyed this one more, just the type of story that it was, is that we did get the start, middle, finish of a relationship arc within the Apollo Midnighter relationship status, what happens, and you saw both characters doing really great things, and you know them a lot better at the end of it versus like X Factor, which is
I will say I do wish the X Factor we had read was as much about Richter and Shatterstar's relationship as the Midnighter and Apollo ended up being, like having a full circle exploration of their whole relationship.
Couple of similarities between the two. Midnighter, murder machine. Shatterstar, murder machine. And the other one wasn't.
But then it flips also, because like Midnighter's the more like dark one, and Apollo's the more like upbeat one, whereas Shatterstar is the more upbeat one, and Richter is sort of like, I'm not going to say depressing, it's not to that point, but serious,
reserved.
Maybe reserved, there you go.
Yeah, but both couples had a soulless psychopath who murdered lots of people for
maybe they did.
In both couples, the psychopath does direct his psychopathy in the, well, not the right direction, but the most appropriate direction.
Harnesses it. For good? Question mark?
Question mark. I don't know if you would necessarily call brutally murdering a bunch of people, bad people, but still people, in front of children who have already been traumatized. I don't know if you would necessarily call that a good thing, but it is a thing that happened, and he could have done worse things.
Mm-hmm.
He could have left the children.
There are worse things he could have done.
Yeah, he could have killed the children too. So, I mean, you know.
He certainly could have.
Also, when I was looking up the characters and trying to understand who they were, I think one time I saw it while I was talking to you guys, but there were many times that I saw Apollo referred to as the feminine Superman, which I appreciate.
I did enjoy that while they did make Apollo the person who needs to be rescued, you know, that's the whole point of Midnighter, which is why we see him. They do make him sort of like the damsel in distress, you know, whatever, the person to be saved. But he has so much agency in freeing himself.
Yes.
That he then has to then turn around and save Midnighter, right, which I thought was a really great plot
device. The rescuing your lover from hell is such like a prototypical story, like Orpheus and Eurydice, but to have it like it flipped back and forth multiple times, I feel like, because eventually Midnighter had been beaten to a bloody pulp and then he needed to be rescued.
I really appreciate what they did with Apollo's character in general, just because he didn't actually need to be saved. Like he rescued himself because he outsmarted Neron.
Yeah, he might not have been able to leave hell by himself.
Right.
Yeah, because of the candle.
That's unclear.
Right.
Yeah.
So they, like, needed each other, and they needed to support each other, but neither of them was fully dependent on the other one.
Right.
Which I appreciate, because, like you said, Veronica, a lot of times in stories where there's a couple involved, one of them is completely helpless, and the other one needs to be saved by them. And I always appreciate stories that avoid doing that. It's kind of, these two are at a different stage in their relationship than Richter and Shatterstar were.
Certainly.
But it kind of goes back to like what we were saying in that episode about reciprocity and stuff like that. Like, you shouldn't be completely dependent on your significant other, whether it's like as a social outlet or
financially or
power-wise. Being rescued from hell.
Yes.
All very relatable.
We've all been so relatable. But yeah, talking about the specific characters a little bit, do you guys want to start with Midnighter or Apollo? Which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's start with Apollo, because I want to hear what you guys have to say about him, because I don't have much, and if we just tail off with Apollo having nothing to say, then it'll be boring. So let's start with Apollo.
Okay, we'll start with Apollo then.
Save the basket of worms for the second.
Well, I'll go first. Apollo, He's a little golden boy.
He's so shiny.
He's a little shiny golden boy who has godlike powers.
With a little boy haircut.
We just don't see him very much. I think we really see him in the first issue. We see him at the dinner party with,
Marina and Tony
and Marina. And afterwards, after the party, Midnighter's thanking Apollo for, you know, having them over. And it's this really cute couple moment where they're washing the dishes. And then they, like, make sex afterwards.
On the kitchen counter, I will specify.
But at some point, it moves to the bedroom.
Yeah, keeping that relationship healthy and balanced of work.
Work and play.
Work and play.
Are we 12? This is the next question.
Yes. But Apollo was open with Midnighter about what he, you know, his concern over what Midnighter had done that day, which was hurt some guys in front of some children, and maybe that wasn't the best way to handle it, and sort of presents the question, is violence always the answer? Why, or the solution? Which is like the theme of this comic, you guys. Is there going to be violence? The answer is yes. Midnighter is going to
punch literally everyone through the face.
He does. He does directly bring it up, and he like directly confronts Midnighter about it, which I appreciate, because also a lot of times in relationships, the person or character or god or whatever who is more of the sensitive one, quote unquote, is portrayed as being, you know, a little more wishy-washy, less direct, kind of skirting about things a little bit. But he just directly brings it up, like, after they've had a really good, like, you know, a lot of times when you've had a good day with someone or you're having like a good experience, it can be difficult to bring up something that's bothering you. But he's just like, nope, we just had sex, we're both in a really good mood, now we need to talk about this thing that's going to be difficult. And I really appreciate that, because a lot of times, especially with characters that are portrayed as more sensitive or having more feminine qualities, they're not portrayed that way as being direct. They're portrayed more passive aggressively, and I don't think he was at all.
Right. I think he's, yeah, really interesting for those points that, like, he obviously is the more feminine in the sense that he is like the kinder one, the one who doesn't turn to violence immediately. But at the same time, like, he reads to me like in manga a lot of time when there's a female protagonist and her love interest like knows everything, and he's gonna guide her through her own emotions essentially and do everything for her and lead her through her path of self-development. That I feel like if Midnighter wasn't such like a self-sufficient dominant personality, he could easily fall into the role of the manga heroine who is guided morally by Apollo and guided emotionally and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So he's like, while Apollo is kinder and whatnot, he's also like a very strong person and not in any way like submissive or anything.
Yeah. Well, that's, I just meant like, in terms of like the Western construction right. of masculinity and femininity, I think that you would identify Apollo as the more feminine one. But the reason that I like this story so much is because that does not equate to weakness. And it right. doesn't equate to weakness in this story either. Like, he's a very strong, powerful character, both physically and like morally and in terms of his convictions, which is why he's able to, you know, play that game with Neron and win. Because right. he's actually a very, very powerful character, not just physically, but emotionally and intellectually as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which I appreciate. I really like Apollo. He was my favorite one by far.
When the bulk of what we see him, while we see Midnighter solving problems, pushing the plot forward with him getting to hell and trying to save Apollo, we see Apollo having a lot of philosophical conversations with Neron. And so we get to know Apollo in the worst place possible, hell, where he's being tortured and bummed out that he's dead, you know, and went through a bunch of crap to get to the part where he can have a little tea time with Neron and discuss what it means to be human and prideful and, you know, nuances of being a superhero. And he talks about how he suffered so much when he was younger. He came out as gay to his family and they didn't treat him well. And then obviously he had a whole
alien abduction and they experimented on him.
Yeah, abducted by aliens. Yeah, I would say that's torture. Yeah, tortured by aliens for years. And he's had to deal with a bunch of crap. So you feel sympathy and motivation for his character. And then he tries to outwit the devil, essentially, which is like balls, you know.
And he does.
He does.
He doesn't try. And he does. There is no try.
There's only two.
Yeah, he's pretty badass. And he truly is just as badass as Midnighter, just in a different flavor. Yes.
Yeah.
Also, he's the top.
Yes.
And a top who is also nice and not the violent one is just great.
Yeah.
That's not the way that things usually go when gay couples are portrayed in media. There's a lot to love about these two.
That's one of the things I was trying to get at a minute ago. Like, it subverts your expectations in so many ways of all the like stereotypes you have about couples of any stripe.
Yeah. But and then it also gives you it gives you what you want in some ways, and then in other ways it gives you what you didn't know you wanted.
Yes.
I don't
not the top you want, but the top you need.
Yeah. So did anybody else have anything else to say about Apollo? I could continue talking about how smart and beautiful and wonderful he is, but...
He's definitely the quarterback. I would like to have seen a little bit more of his own, like, internal journey, because he is kind of, like, he's strong all the way through. He's got some trials to go through, but I don't really see him ever doubt himself, and maybe that's present in his previous stories.
Yeah, he's sure of himself the whole time. Like, there's not a moment during his whole interrogation with Neron that he's like, oh, maybe I do deserve to be in hell. Like, nah, he's just like, nah, dude, you're fucked.
Nah, man.
This is whack.
This is dumb, man. You know I'm going to get out. Like, I don't belong here.
What does he call himself? Like, the discount Superman or something? It's like, yeah.
I did think, I did love him. Don't get me wrong. I really liked him. But... he was getting a little bit preachy during the game with Neron, where he's like, I chose this name so that I can blah, blah, blah. And because I'm so great and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, Apollo, like, maybe you should
wrap it up, Apollo.
Look, it's the villain who's supposed to have the long egotistical monologue, like not the hero. Calm it down.
That's why. Neron had to get back.
He definitely had to make up for the fact that he was like, "Whoa, you're stealing my monologue. I'm gonna have to keep talking for the next three fucking issues." And they were annoying words too. How did you feel about him as a villain? He was intimidating, kind of.
He's a but not really. Nerd. He's such a nerd.
Yeah, he like has him play a board game.
He gets very much into the, ha ha ha, tell me again at the end. I'm like, you nerd.
Yeah. He was more bark than bite. He didn't really follow up with any of his threats. There was he was fighting Midnighter. Midnighter pulls out his last resort or, you know, his weapon, which is like angelic power or whatever. Mm. And he beats the crap out of Neron, and then Neron just stands up like 5 minutes later and says, yeah, so like obviously I'm the king of hell, and that's not really
this fight didn't matter at all enough. Actually
this didn't really matter, but it's not like Neron then turned around and
then he just kept talking.
Yes, just kept going.
Oh, there was just so much talking.
Yes. That's what I was going to say that I forgot from earlier, the like, oh, what you did just now didn't matter at all. With the inversion of like, they both needed each other to get out, it didn't do the thing that the second new Star Wars movie did. We're like, oh, so we just put in a bunch of effort for literally no reason and also may have ruined everything. by yes. doing all that right. we tried to do.
Yeah.
It all still yeah. mattered in the end.
Yeah, it did matter. It definitely did matter.
Yeah, I don't love it when movies or stories do that, when you put a lot of emotional investment and time, so much right. time investing in someone doing something, and then they get to a point where it should matter, and then it flips and says it didn't matter, and also they could have just been playing, like, Parcheesi this whole time, and right. nothing, and this would have still happened exactly as is, and nothing they did, they were just
right.
chilling, they were just it wasting feels, time, and I don't yeah. like that.
Like, you can even do that in a way that works, but when you do it in a way that pulls the rug out from under the audience, because your audience has been invested in their struggle the whole time, when you tell the audience, oh, what we spent the whole movie on was worthless. It's one thing if you do it like, we start at that point, we're like, haha, everything you just did was worthless, beginning of the movie, or condense yeah. it so that it doesn't take up the whole movie and all your emotions yeah. of the plot.
Or even if it feels like it was still worth it to try
for yourself,
kind of thing,
yeah.
then that makes it better. But if it's just so incompetent, you realize at the end what they did, they were like children playing in the yes. backyard, thinking that they were making a difference when really nothing they did mattered. That is
they
so
didn't learn anything.
They didn't learn anything. It wasn't that they, you know, something came up that they couldn't predict. It wasn't their cleverness, their planning skills, all of it was they could have easily just been playing yeah. solitaire in the back room and the yeah. exact same thing.
Not just
happened,
failure, you know? But you wasted your time and you're dumb and pointless.
yes. Yeah. In this story, that definitely yeah. didn't happen because
no, I was
even
worried
though
it was gonna.
Midnighter. But fighting all of those demons didn't really do much. Like, he could have just waited for Apollo to show up, but still it
no
mattered
way.
Because it mattered a lot to Apollo. Like, it mattered a lot to their relationship. It mattered right. a lot to those characters that he
and
did
it
that.
It could have been the case that it didn't, because he didn't know Apollo would break himself out. He didn't know that Apollo wasn't at the castle anymore. So they were both doing their best in a way that would have mattered if it had
right.
worked out that way. And did still.
It made sense to get to where they needed to be. It all sort of flowed and was logical and satisfying that even though Midnighter did sort of have a hubris thing going on, he thought he could just fight his way through hordes of demons and then have enough strength to fight the devil even with the trick up his sleeve. It still wasn't enough. So there's a little bit of hubris there, which is good character development, and that's great. And then Apollo shows up and they just fly out of there. Easy peasy. Teamwork.
Some more punching, but easy peasy in the end.
Yes. So let's talk about Midnighter as a character. I don't have as much to say about him, so I will let Veronica, I think you probably have the most to say about him.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to learn more about him. I don't know. Did you said this was the whole run of this comic. Are there more appearances of the two of them?
Yeah, they appear a lot. And Midnighter has his own solo series.
Okay.
Or and had at one I don't know if he still does, but he did at one
yes.
point.
And background would be important. And I think this ties into, like, not necessarily direct childhood trauma, but like a metaphor for trauma. Like, he has a computer murder brain. And he doesn't
what?
Have... What? I've never heard
I didn't
of that.
Know that.
Revelation. And he doesn't have a name. And I would be interested to see, like, what... Like, a psychological evaluation of him, essentially. Like, what is his personality apart from being a murder machine? Because, like Melissa said, he takes a lot of joy in murder. Maybe it was Melissa who said, maybe it was Monte.
We yes.
said like everyone said it.
Like, and it doesn't seem like it's like a personal developed joy. When he's not murdering, he's very matter of fact about it. He's like, you know, I murder because that's the best way to solve the problem, and like pragmatic and practical about it. But then when he's fighting, he gets these, like I said, those awful Batman faces on his face. Like, he's like, yeah, I love murder because it's murder. And I'd be interested to see, like, because there's a lot of reactions you have to trauma that read as personality, but in the end, there's something that you could decide, this is an unhealthy aspect of my personality that has developed from my trauma responses, and how you have to, like, go through a system of healing to decide, like, what is what, how can I distance myself from those behaviors and those feelings and those expectations, and come out with what my true personality underlying that would be.
Yes, that was something that, well, I think I had planned to talk about it when we talk about them as a couple, but we already kind of have, so we can just put that, like, intersperse that between them, but I thought it was really interesting, the conversation between Midnighter and Apollo, the first one when they're talking about violence, and he's just like, this is who I am, and Apollo is saying, well, I don't want to change you, I just want to, you know, help you get better. And it's like, a lot of times people will have bad behaviors, bad habits, things that are like maladaptive or self-destructive. And they'll be like, well, this is just who I am. You know, I'm blunt and that's just who I am. And it's like, well, is that really who you are? Or is that like a defense mechanism that you've built up because you're afraid of the world?
Right.
Or in this case, like, is that really who you are, that you kill and you don't feel anything about it? Or is that because, well, I don't know, you were tortured for your entire fucking life, like,
right, and you have, I don't know, no,
maybe you should work through that.
Yeah, maybe you should figure out where that comes from and if you need to do it. Kind of meta, there's sort of a phenomenon I've read about in people who play Dungeons and Dragons. Obviously this isn't commentary on why traumatized people or maladaptive people behave the way they do, but there's sort of a thing where if your player's doing something that bothers other players and they excuse it by saying, well, that's what my character would do, thinking that's the end of the conversation, like, I'm just good at role playing, this is what my character would do, it's like, well, you can separate those behaviors into multiple options that still, you know, it doesn't mean your personality, your character's personality, or your personality, if you're a traumatized person, is gone because you don't do that thing. This is a discussion of behaviors versus, you know, motivations and personality underlying that.
Would it be fair to say that Midnighter is sort of a combination of Batman, Deadpool, and yes. The Punisher, yeah. Sort of.
You have spoken what we were, yes, all thinking, Melissa.
Yeah, I was equating him most with Batman, but I was like, he's not really Batman. And that's what it is.
Yeah.
He's a combination of those three characters. Consequentially, three of my least favorite characters in comics, but I like Midnighter.
Do you think that whoever conceived of their characters conceived of Apollo as a budget Superman and Midnighter as a budget Batman and was like, what if this was slash fiction of Superman and Batman?
Yeah.
Maybe.
All three of them had a little baby.
I don't know.
Little poor Midnighter.
But I don't
baby.
Think of Apollo as a budget Superman. He is much better than Superman. Fuck Superman. Superman sucks. Apollo sucks too, but got that? Yeah, that's a you little gay joke for you.
While I was reading this, I texted Monte a screen cap of something that made me go like, damn. And it was not the sexy.
No, I know what it was. And yes. It's my favorite, one of my favorite panels.
Oh, well, we'll save it for later then.
Yes.
One thing. Just bring it back to Midnighter and who he is as a person. One thing I really enjoyed was issue 5, while he is fighting Neuron and he's being really cheesy about it. I can't wait to break your stupid little neck. And he's just got all these little one-liners and he's fighting. He's drenched in blood and he's got his maniac little smile that's truly disturbing. And he seemingly defeats Neuron, and then as soon as it's over, like the fight in his mind is over, his powers have like drained from him, and he sees what he thinks is Apollo in some kind of weird glass container.
It was very Jasmine
illusion.
Yes.
it was, which is why it hits so hard home that it kind of subverts that expectation, which is great. And but he doesn't know that, because he's kind of dumb. I feel like maybe if he had spent 30 seconds trying to speak to Apollo, he would have realized that it's not Apollo in this weird glass chamber thing. Anyway, he's like crawling towards Apollo and he's like, I told you I wouldn't stop coming. I promised you, because you can see that he loves Apollo so much. So when it turns out to not be Apollo, he's kind of sad. But then the real Apollo shows up and the real Apollo says he's late, you know, as he realizes that Midnighter's here and he's already halfway back to where he thinks he needs to go. And he has got to circle back to rescue his big dumb boyfriend who loves him so much. And he loves him. And I was like, oh, I'm so precious.
And he knew he would come. He knew he would be there.
He was like, what took you so long?
It was so beautiful.
It was cute. It was amazing.
God, I'm crying.
But a few seconds ago, me and you were snickering like 12-year-olds at something Melissa said, which was, I won't stop coming.
Yeah. Yeah, he won't.
Sure won't.
That's why we were snickering while you were talking.
Love it.
I was too busy talking.
We didn't want to stop you because it was a very good point.
But yeah, the relationship is pretty cute. Pretty cute. And if it were just, if it didn't have all the other elements we talked about, it would honestly feel hollow. But I feel like the writers really built your expectations of these two as a couple. So when one of them is making really cheesy, I love you and I'm here for you, I came to hell for you, you know, it didn't feel like cheesy, bland, hollow, cliche. I mean, it was cliche, but you know what
it
I mean.
It was cliche, but in a good way.
It was
way.
Still satisfying. It was,
all romance.
Yeah, it was in a good
way. Yeah.
Yeah, it was sure. The kind that you want, because you believed it. At least I believed it.
Right.
Like, a lot of times in, especially in TV, maybe just because it's actually on screen and you're seeing it and you're like hearing their voices, so you're not doing it in your head voice, you know? You're not projecting anything onto it necessarily, but if this was a TV show, it probably would not have worked as well, you know? It probably would have come off as pretty cheesy and stuff.
But honestly, this whole comic is very cheesy. And this comic book science, so it all blended really well. It was all it was a nice chili of cheesy, and
it was very much a matter of like
spicy
silliness. You need to buy in, but once you buy in, you're like, great.
yeah
exactly.
I only noticed also on my second skim through just before we started to remind myself of everything that happened that there was like a relationship through line over the whole thing, not just like I'm so devoted to you. At the beginning, Midnighter was hesitant to move in with Apollo because apparently they'd broken up and gotten back together. They were taking it slow, not trying to like go too fast, etc. And then at the end, we have Midnighter packing up his apartment, presumably to move in with Apollo. So they have achieved the next step in their relationship, which is Presh.
Also, one thing I wanted to just mention is that we get both of them holding the body of the other one.
That was the inversion thing. Yes. It all inverted around and we get the, no, my love, dead in your arms.
Yes,
thing.
There was at the beginning when Apollo is seemingly dead, his body is fine, but his soul is in hell, and Midnighter goes and finds it, and everyone's out with their pictures or their cameras,
so
taking
grim, so
cell phone
grim
pictures and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is
I'm seeing that real as a trend in several comics we've read lately, that there's like one panel where people in the background are like taking pictures of the fight that's going on and not helping the hero or whatever.
Yeah, and it really shows that vulnerability for both of them, that when it comes down to it, they will both do what it takes to keep going. And I would say Midnighter had more comedic moments, since most of Apollo was just like talking to Neron, and both of those are
the most monologue characters in the whole thing.
It was just conflicting monologues.
Which conflicting monologues would be a dialogue, but not in this.
No.
Not this time.
No. It was not. They were definitely not talking to each other.
They were both waiting for each of the other to stop talking.
Oh my God,
so that they
can stop so I can give my monologue. I'm going to forget it. I had these lines memorized. How long do you think Apollo was waiting for the day that he would be sent to hell so that he could explain to someone why he came up with his name?
So long. He's like, everyone thinks I'm Apollo because I use sun powers. And I think I'm as good as a god. But little do they know, it's about homoeroticism. Yeah.
It's actually because I'm gay.
Apollo just needs like a vlog.
That's what he does. I did really like at first, because he gave two reasons for why he chose the name Apollo, and the first one was like, I want to inspire people, and because the world needs a light and everyone needs to know they can be a hero. But no, it's just I'm gay. Super gay, and super gay. I like to fuck my boyfriend because I'm gay.
I have a really nice piece of art of Apollo and Hyacinth that I will send you guys later, but is beautiful. The death of Hyacinthos.
But yeah, anything else to say about Midnighter?
So much punching, so much murder, so many disturbing faces.
I think he had a computer brain.
Oh, really? So. Did he? A murder brain made of computers.
It was a fight brain, you guys.
But
fight brain.
On the other thing of non-sarcastic Midnighter powers, he could open portals. It was a thing he could do. It took a while to tell us that, and then it didn't matter anymore after a while.
Nope.
Yeah, well, they did repeat several times, don't have your computer brain in hell, don't have your teleportation in hell, don't have blah, blah, blah. And we're like, we get it.
He's only got punch super powers. Strong. Fine.
So we've been kind of talking about them as a couple, but does anyone have any last things to say about them as a couple, or like just overall the theme of violence and when it's necessary?
I don't have anything super deep like that. But when they reach the candle, Apollo and Midnighter are racing towards the end of hell. The candle that's opened the portal for them to get to hell is about to snuff out. They reach for it. Midnighter lands in his living room, which, by the way, the artwork in this was just really great. It shows him, you know, coming through the portal, landing
there
on his living
so
room
many
couch, into
really
the room.
Really good kinetic action shots. Like, there was one at the beginning where he goes through the train. Really good.
And Apollo's in his little sunroom, and, you know, Midnighter's just beat the hell up, and then they, like, make out, and everything's, like, glowy and yellow and beautiful, and I was like, this is an amazing kiss. This was very satisfying. These both are probably, like, probably need to take a five before they start kissing, but there's, it doesn't matter. Like, it's a comic book. Like, just let them.
Could have stood for some first aid. Just saying. Like,
probably needed to, like, take a breath before making out, but I'm good for it. This is not what this realism is not what this comic is about. So
this is about a fight brain a sun man.
It was very satisfying.
Yes. And Apollo was really, I'm looking at the lead up to that scene, he was monologuing to the end.
Up to the end.
Yeah, Midnighter was in his arms, and the whole time they were flying, Midnighter didn't say a word, but there was always dialogue. There was always a text box.
And then,
always, like, a speech bubble.
Monte, the last panel of the comic is Apollo breaking the fourth wall and saying, not even, he literally says, what do you think, to the audience? The most cliched fourth wall breaking thing you could say.
Hilarious. I think you should shut the fuck up, Apollo. That's what I think.
Take his pants off.
Yeah. Midnighter's taking his clothes off, and Apollo says, well, what do you think? Wink, wink, audience. We're gonna do more than kiss later. Yeah, it's really great. Midnighter had his little bit. He had a little, so they're come back. They're all healed up. They just had that whole hell experience. Such a bummer. They have a little dinner party with their friends. And then Midnighter, they are playing
the evil board game.
What was it? The Mansion of Happiness game that Apollo was playing. I don't know where they got a copy of it. The evil devil board game. They're in their, like, new apartment. All their stuff is in boxes. And then Midnighter stands up and is like, he's got his little booty shorts on and he just has like a giant monologue of how he's talking to Apollo. And so he got his bit in, Monte.
He did eventually, get a word in Apollo, edgewise he did, eventually.
He did. He stood up and he had his hands. He's like, I'm going to say what I want to say. he stuck his courage to the sticky place and said what he needed to say.
And Apollo was like, Jesus, yep. Would you just hurry up so I can talk?
And then they fucked.
But before they fucked, Apollo did talk.
Yes, he did.
He did. He did have quite a lot. He almost did the same amount of things to say.
I just want to throw in, before we finish, about the issue of, like, acknowledging the childhood trauma or the past trauma of characters. We've seen a lot more of that in more modern comics, and it's much more realistic, a portrayal of what it would be like to be a hero. In particular, Melissa, you've read Rainbow Rowell's Carry On, as well as I have, which is, by the way, if you love things that are a pastiche of other things, I'd read Carry On. It's a pastiche of Harry Potter and fan fiction, which is great. But essentially at the core, it's about like what Harry Potter would be like if it really acknowledged the trauma that Harry Potter would have from his whole entire life of being an orphan and being the chosen one. And I feel like we're seeing a lot more of that in comics nowadays, just of like, you're a hero, a civilian hero, and you save people and what toll that would take on you. Let alone if you were experimented on your whole childhood.
So, before we finish up today, does anyone have any last words now that we've discussed the comic?
I think I appreciate Apollo more after hearing what you guys had to say about him, because I had very little to say about him, but Monte, conversely, had very little to say about Midnighter, so I think we balanced out.
I don't really have a ton to say, but I did want to point out that Midnighter has a computer brain, and he's good at fighting.
They should make a movie about Midnighter, because they've already choreographed the kinetic one-shot fight scenes.
Now is the time in the podcast where we talk about our favorite panels. And since this was my story, I'll go ahead and start. My favorite panel was going to be the kiss that was mentioned earlier, because it's a very well-drawn and beautiful panel and page. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. I decided instead to go with the lewd funny joke.
it's so good!
Yes, in issue 6.
yep, I know what you're talking about.
Midnighter is about to fight himself, and it's, I guess, an evil version of him or some, who knows, but he doesn't have a chance to, because Apollo just blasts the shit out of it and destroys it. And then Midnighter goes, you blew me up. How'd you know I wasn't the bendable one? And then Apollo says, please, you think I don't recognize the back of your head? Because Apollo is a top.
Well, what about Midnighter's response?
He says, you can prove it later, which I think he already did prove it, Midnighter. And that's, you asked him and then he, but we get it and we appreciate it and we love it.
Yes.
His computer brain needs for follow up.
His computer brain just needed to confirm it, I guess. Or
I was at work when I read
Trust but verify. Yes. Like
I was at work when I read that and I said out loud, damn.
They gonna fuck.
Yes. Excellent.
And he did.
And he did.
That's he did prove it later.
Recognition is one of the most important parts of sex.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know. What does it mean to say you recognize the back of my head and then say prove it? It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but when you say it, it
made sense
worse,
up so. Until Midnighter's response. But I guess that's when you're good. As quippy as they are, you have to say something.
You've gotta.
Something that sounds just, like a quip.
He couldn't just let him get the last word, even though I imagine that he usually brain, does.
His computer brain couldn't just be like, I feel no. Like usually, yes. He can't just say nothing.
I feel like usually Midnighter does get the last word, because Apollo gets 99% of the words in the middle, and then Midnighter says something at the end.
Honestly, if he didn't get the last word, then yes. When would he go? No.
But what were you guys' favorite panels?
I was thinking about doing one of Midnighter's terrifying faces. There's a great one in issue 4 where he goes from like to terrifying grin. But I decided to go less character based and just like cool art based. So in issue 2, about halfway through, after Midnighter has brought Apollo's like dead body back to the apartment and he put it in a room full of portals he's opened to the sun, presumably to preserve his dead body. So like literally the sun is coming into this room. There's this cool art thing that's happening where it's clearly like hurting Midnighter to be in this room. There's like particles like coming off of his shirt, at least. He's like dissolving is the word that I wanted. He's like dissolving, but he's so like emotional. He has to come and like look at the dead body and be like, I will save you, my love. But just like a cool art thing that like, yeah, that would happen. But also a cool character thing because he's so emotional that he does not care.
My favorite panel is also in issue 6. It's not right before Montes, but it's right before the sequence of Montes, where Apollo realizes, right, it's like the second page, maybe. Previously, Apollo heard Midnighter say something, and the, you know, issue 5 ends with him turning around and saying, Midnighter, you're late, essentially. And when he's flying back, my favorite panel is at the bottom of the page, and it's an image of Apollo flying, and you can see his butt perfectly centered, where like you didn't have to see his butt, they could have angled his body in any way. He's just flying, but it's a rear view of him flying towards the weird house that Neron and Midnighter are in. And, you know, he says something about, now you've thrown your last as I unspool your soul and all your
monologuing to himself.
The words, the words don't matter. What really matters is that Apollo is flying back to save his love, his, you know, his boyfriend. And you just see like a really nice detailed
very
ass.
Very clenched and muscular.
Very clenched. And I just feel like that's the thing that I usually miss in these kinds of comics. I mean, you see all kinds of women's butts and boobs and, I mean, in positions that don't make sense for how organs work or just how bodies work. And they always manage to have, you know, those kinds of shots of the women. This is what I've been waiting for. I've been waiting for a gratuitous ass shot of a man for no reason.
A man is not made of plants.
Yeah, not made of plants. This
we got
is what
a bit
I
of a preview when, in the Daredevil comic when whenever Daredevil was on the screen, it was clearly hot for Daredevil.
I'm not saying it's the first time. I'm just saying like I appreciate it. It's good to have the balance, you know, when you read a comic and it's imbalanced.
Unfortunately, in these panels on this page, Midnighter is like in a soul, or Apollo is in like a soul version of himself and no longer has like half of his shirt ripped off. So you are denied the chest.
Yeah, that was great though.
But you get the butt.
This comic really satisfied that female gaze that I really needed. That I miss out
I
a lot of times.
I was wondering, I'm Googling to try to see if Fernando Blanco is a, you know, I can't tell though. Or not I can't tell, I don't see it.
With all of our favorite panels, I am going to post them to our social media. So check us out on Instagram and Twitter at SJW Comics Cast. Let us know what your favorite panel was. And we are now going to move into our self-care corner, where we not only encourage our listeners to practice self-care, but we prove to you that you should practice self-care by proving that we practice self-care. So, Monte and Veronica, what is something that you guys have done that was good for the betterment of your mental, physical, emotional, spiritual well-being?
I do have an actual answer, so I will go first. I've been weirdly, in the last several months, I started like participating in social media, which for me is bad. Some people might enjoy like commenting on Reddit threads and find that edifying and to have value in their lives. I find it to be a huge gamble on whether my self-esteem will be destroyed for the rest of the day or like the tiniest hit of dopamine when I get like good responses. So in addition to that, I want to reduce my amount of Reddit, mostly consumption, Reddit and BuzzFeed, less time on the internet, just essentially less time on my phone. Since I've been doing so much lately, I was like, how can I wean myself off these addictive tiny hits of dopamine from reading like only headlines and only seeing pictures on Reddit? So I looked up some lists and I'm taking steps. The main one being I have turned my phone to grayscale, which is apparently a thing you can do on iPhone. It reduces the feeling the compulsion I have to click on apps, because they're not bright and colorful. They're just little gray symbols there for me when I need to use them. So it hasn't necessarily yet come to fruition, but I'm trying to reduce my dependence on my phone, and I'm making that effort.
Yes. Good job.
It's always one day at a time.
So uninteresting. Look at the icons.
Don't look at the iPhone.
Don't look at them. They're so not interesting and won't give you good brain hormones. Just ignore them.
Not just me, but my boyfriend and I finished clearing out the back room where I spend most of my day, because it's where my work computer is. So it actually feels like a room and not a storage closet.
That you are stored in as well as all the storage?
Yeah. So that makes me feel really good, and that's it.
Fair enough. Being productive around the house feels like sometimes way harder, just like the mental leading up to
it. Yeah, he had time off work, so we just did it.
Yeah, that feeling of something off, checked off my list. That's really great. My self-care corner is going to be something, I'm going to circle back to something I mentioned in a previous episode that I said I had started doing. And I just wanted everyone to know that I'm still doing it, which is eating eggs and rice almost every single day for lunch.
Congratulations.
And I have gotten really good. I've spiced things up. I've got some green onions now that I add to my over easy eggs. And, you know, I just get a little bit of seasonings in there. But it's usually pretty simple. And I...
Now you need some seaweed or something.
I got some cooking wine to see, because I read online that you can make your eggs with cooking wine, or it's, I don't know, it's, maybe cooking wine isn't the right thing, and maybe it was vinegar, cooking vinegar, I don't know. All I know is that I bought it and I haven't used it, because I just make it the me way. And not the good way, if that makes sense. But having a very stable but semi-healthy lunch every day, that's sometimes, most of the time, vegetarian, feels good. And I've been doing it a month later. I tend to start something like that. Like when it comes to food, I can eat the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
That's a good trait bored. To have.
Yeah, I do not have that trait.
Yeah. Well, it's easy when it's eggs and rice, apparently.
Tiny applause for Melissa. So yes, everyone, please take care of yourselves as we come up to next week, when we will be reading a comic of my choice, which is Poison Ivy. Although, sadly, I don't think she is actually green in this comic, which infuriates me, but it's already been decided. So we'll be reading a comic called Poison Ivy, Cycle of Life and Death, which I believe is 6 issues long. We'll be reading all 6 issues. It appears to be like a murder mystery type story. It's like a one-off run written by a woman. Women's History Month. Support female creators. So we may do that thing that I did during my mystery season, where I make you guys try to guess what's going to happen, depending on the structure of it. But it should be good. And as always, we will link to that comic on Comixology in the episode description of this episode. You can also probably find it on Amazon and possibly in your public library or local bookstore. But that is it for this week. If you enjoyed our podcast, please like and subscribe. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star rating. We would appreciate it very much. And also, if you have anyone you think would enjoy listening to our podcast, feel free to recommend it to them. If you want to keep up with us on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SJW Comics Cast, or email us directly at sjwcomicspodcast@gmail.com. This was our podcast. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.